matchup, feel, where is it mentally and physically? Consulting with our training staff, we all know that Nikola is a starter. This is not something that he'll be coming off the bench for the rest of the year. If it's not tonight, I'm sure it will be sometime in the near future.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. And today's Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast is also brought to you by MyBookie. Sign up now and get your deposit matched up to 50% bonus by using the promo code LockedOnNBA. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst over at BasketballMonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. We are going to cover a lot of stuff on today's show. We've got 12 games from Wednesday to break down. We've got a 5-game slate for Thursday. So
let's get to it.
We'll get stuck straight into it because there is obviously a lot for us to get to. We will start off with the monstrous line of the night. It was a really close one. In the end, I go with Jim Harden, who had 51 points, 3 rebounds, 9 assists. He had 4 threes, a steal, a block, and was 15 of 27 from the field and 17 of 21 from the free throw line. Harden has just dipped below LeBron James as the number one player in fantasy. He's the number two guy at the moment, averaging 32, 5, and 9, 4 threes, 2 steals, half a block, 45 and 86. Now, he could potentially have to weather a couple more games without Chris Paul after Paul hurt his adductor today. It doesn't appear like it's going to be too serious, but we saw that that didn't really impact Harden negatively at all with Paul out. In fact, it maybe gave him somewhat of a boost, so I don't think we have anything to really worry about. He looked fine in terms of the knee, which was bothering him a couple of games ago. So he's going to be rocking from here on out. And if you made that pick to draft him, I don't think anyone could possibly be complaining about anything they have gotten from Jim Harden so far this season. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Kelly Olynyk of the Miami Heat. 32, 7, and 2 for Olynyk. 6 triples, 1 steal, 1 block. 12 of 15 from the field. I guess he let himself down, only going 2 of 5 from the line, but that is a huge performance. Many people will want to point to this as being a revenge game, and I would just point you back to the 22nd of November when Olynyk played against the Boston Celtics and had 6 and 6. So while this was fantastic, it's a career night for him. The 80% shooting is fantastic. It's one of those nights again. It's no more revenge game for talk from me. This is just fantastic from Olynyk. He should be owned in all leagues while Hassan Whiteside is out. He's a top 100 player over the last month, despite playing just 26 minutes per game and despite scoring only 11 points per game. But it's a combination of steals, half a block, good percentages, some rebound numbers that puts him in that top 100 zone, and he should be there. Now, there'll be some nights where he gets into foul trouble, and that limits what he can do. But he realistically, in all 12-team leagues, he needs to be owned at least until Hassan Whiteside comes back. And then when Whiteside and Jimmy Johnson return, it is going to be hard to see him be able to eke out 26 or 27 minutes a night prior to those guys getting injured. He was playing like 17 or 18. And if they're going to keep Bam Adebayo in the rotation, he might struggle to even push towards 20. So he might be down at that 17 range if Adebayo is going to remain in the rotation. So we'll see how that all goes. But for now, Oubre is a guy that needs to be owned in all leagues of 12 teams and up. Now I'm going to tell you about the people who are helping to make this this show possible, and that is the good folks over at MyBookie. Bowl season is here for you college football fans, and it's time to get in on the action with MyBookie. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for your payout? If you sign up at mybookie.ag today, you get paid fast when you win. MyBookie is your hookup for all your betting needs, and you can even deposit using Bitcoin. There you go. I don't know anything about Bitcoin, but I watched a few things about it today, and it was interesting. I need to learn a little bit more about that. Where you bet on sports is just as important as who you're betting on. If you want to make money betting on the bowl games, or the NBA, or the NHL, or the NFL playoffs that are coming up, you got to go to mybookie.ag. They're the only site that I'd recommend for you folks over there in the United States. I trust them, but you don't have to take my word for them. Just go and check them out yourself. They have odds on every matchup, as well as in-game live betting on all this season's NFL games, bowl games, and of course, all the NBA action. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 50% bonus. Just use the promo code LockedOnNBA to activate that bonus offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. If you're going to bet, the only place to do it is at MyBookie. So thank you for the guys at MyBookie for supporting this podcast once again. the young gun of the night. Of course it is. It is Kyle Kuzma of the Los Angeles Lakers. The future MVP was on fire to begin this game. 38 points with 7 triples, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 0 steals and 1 block. And he cooled down a little bit. 12 of 17 from the field and 7 of 10 from the line. He is the 79th ranked player this season, playing over 31 minutes per game. I didn't think he'd be able to get to that many minutes, but the injury to Larry Nance and now the injury to Brook Lopez has helped him get some of those minutes back. And he's a guy that has to be owned in all leagues, clearly. He's shooting 51% from the field. He's shooting 41% from three, numbers which could come down. And he's still not doing much in these other areas. Just 1.6 assists, 0.3 steals, 0.3 blocks. These aren't fantastic numbers. But 17.5 and 6.5 with 2 threes, that is. Over the last month, 18.5 and 6.5 with 2.5 threes. Obviously, they are really, really good numbers there for Kuzma. And putting up those sort of numbers on an ongoing basis is going to make him. And look, he started today. They moved Larry Nance to the bench because I'm not going to talk about Walton later on. But I think I can't see him losing this starting job back to Larry Nance, even when Brook Lopez returns. Now, Walton is not the best coach of all time. He makes maddening and baffling rotational decisions. But I think that the Lakers faithful will have a real issue if they put Nance back into the starting lineup over Kuzma. And if Kuzma doesn't get 30 minutes a night from here on out. So he is going to be really strong as we move forward, putting up these good numbers. And he is, of course, your future MVP. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Couple of options here, but I have to go to his teammate, and that is Julius Randle, who had 4-1-1 and played 8 minutes. Now, hear me out. When your starting center goes down in Brook Lopez, it doesn't make a huge amount of sense to then play your backup center, who was playing 25 a night and I think played 28 in that game that Lopez actually got injured. Let's double check that so I've got all my facts. He played 31 in that game, that overtime game against the Warriors. When Lopez got injured, Julius Randle played 31 minutes in that game. So in the next game when Lopez is out, not only don't you start Randle, who was your backup center, but you play him 8 minutes. It is just a nonsensical rotational decision. Lakers fans really do like Julius Randle. There is no chance that he's going to be with his team next season. There's none whatsoever that he will be playing with his team next season. I can pretty much assure you of that. But this is just a decision that just reeks of bafflement. Now, we did talk about that Walton would probably go out there and start Andrew Bogut for whatever reason. There's zero reason for Bogut to go out there and start. Bogut had not been playing at all. You've got Ivica Zubac, who's a chance to be maybe your center of the future. You've got Tom Bryant, who's been putting up some really good numbers in the G League for the South Bay Lakers. And you've got Julius Randle, who you could have started at center. Even if you didn't want to start him at center and you wanted to go with this ceremonial Bogut bullshit, you could have done it. And you could have put Randle in and played him his 28 minutes, 30 minutes as the backup. But because Corey Brewer was hot, because Larry Nance was hot, we had to just limit Randle. It's a weird situation from and Walton. People will point to it and go, Josh, they were smashing the Rockets. Just because the result is positive doesn't mean the thought process behind it is the right thing to do. There's sometimes things happen in spite of decisions. That's why the Bucks are winning games. Not because of Jason Kidd, but completely in spite of him. And, results, again, if I know that's a results-orientated business, and everything pretty much is you want the results. But if you luck into wins through processes or thought processes that aren't actually sustainable or make any sense, then I think it's the wrong way to go about it. It's like saying that a coach is coaching for his job when the team's tanking and rebuilding. Well, no, they should have that aim. If you win games, it doesn't matter, but let's actually try and build something for the future. Not like you have to make sure you get a meaningless win in March by playing your veterans 30 minutes because that's going to keep your job. Like, that's sort of, these are billion-dollar companies, we know that. But seriously, some of the shit that goes on in some of these NBA teams is laughably bad, in my opinion, in terms of just hiring processes. Like, the Lakers didn't interview anyone else apart from Luke Walton for this job. Didn't interview anyone else apart from Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka for the GM roles. Interviewed no one else. Like, that is a laughable situation for a franchise that's worth probably $2.5 billion. You don't interview any candidates. You just go, well, you used to play here, so you can have the job. Oh, you didn't look like a complete cock in the interview. You got it. Like, that's a laughable process. And that's why there's so many dumb things that do happen in the NBA, regardless of the results. As for Randle, he's not going to play 8 minutes every night. with this Lopez injury, he'll probably go out and play 25 or 26, but obviously this was a shit-house situation for DFS. People who played him, I was big on Randall for today in DFS, and not one single person could have possibly foreseen that he would play 23 fewer minutes in a game where there was one less center, or the starting center was out. There is no logic to be applied to that whatsoever, and it doesn't make any sense to me at all. But here I am sitting home in Australia while Luke Walton's making millions coaching the Lakers, so maybe I'm the idiot. Who knows? Let's get into these 12 games. There is a lot to talk about in those games. Actually, in some of them, there's nothing to talk about because they were just absolute ass kickings. And, you know, taking too much out of those is not going to be the greatest way to go about it. But we will talk about them. We'll get into those games right now. The first one of those games we're going to talk about, I'll just bring that up on my screen. It's the Toronto Raptors. They went down to Charlotte and they spanked them. Serge Ibaka returned from a one-game absence, continued on his strong form, 24-5 with two triples and two blocks. He has been really, really good the last month or so. But I want to talk about the Jedi, OG Anunoby, who played 31 minutes, had 20 points with six threes, four rebounds, two assists and a steal. I've talked at length about how much I like him for Dynasty, but the main reason I liked him in Dynasty with his high steal and block rate, he has had exactly one block the entire season, which is unfathomably low. The biggest concern with Anunoby was his offense and how he'd be able to shoot. Well, he's shooting over 40% on threes this season, and over the last month, he's shooting over 50% on threes. So just a complete upside downness in terms of what his value is. There is no way he's giving up this starting small forward job. He has got this locked down for the next 10 years, I would say, in Toronto, and I love his top 70 dynasty upside, at least maybe top 50 upside. Because once the defensive numbers come in, if he can continue shooting and be a potential triple 1.5 guy, or maybe a 1.5 guy, add six rebounds, the passing's been impressive for him. He's been super good. Now, in saying that, he's probably not a 12-team league guy this year. He's a borderline 14-team league guy, but he's not playing under 20 minutes a game again this season. Now, Jonas Valanciunas got into some foul trouble, and it was a blow-up. Only 16 minutes, 4-7 with two steals and a block. It's still frustrating that we have to deal with this shit. He should be playing more minutes than that, we're well aware, and that makes him a borderline standard league guy. But I wouldn't drop him just after this one. While Jakob Poeltl, in 23 minutes, had 6-8 with three blocks. That's nice, but again, more just a deeper league guy. DeRozan and Lowry, they didn't need to extend themselves. In fact, neither of them went over 30 minutes, but still put up some decent performances, 8 assists each. On the Charlotte Hornets, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist suffered a shoulder injury. He was able to return to the game, but that limited him to 22 minutes. And that enabled Jezza Lamb to put up a career-high 32 points. 28 minutes for Jez, 2 triples, 3 rebounds, 2 assists on 65% shooting. Now, high field goal percentage is not something that's all that foreign to Lamb, but of course, getting this level of opportunity and that level of shooting is something that shouldn't be relied upon. He's okay for 12-team leagues, but with Batum in front of him, with Kidd-Gilchrist there, yeah, he required a few things to go in his favour. The injury to Kidd-Gilchrist and the absolute ass-kicking that the Hornets got enabled him to get those extra minutes. It was that much of an ass-kicking that Malik Monk played 14 minutes. Kemba had 15 points with 4 steals. Dwight had 15-9. And Marvin Williams, another shit-house performance. 20 minutes for Marv, 7-4. He has been piss-poor in a situation where he probably should have been getting more minutes. Without Cody Zeller, meaning Frank had to move more to center, but they're just putting Johnny O'Brien in that role, and Kaminsky's getting more minutes at power forward ahead of Marv, and he is not a guy you want in 12s. I don't think Frank is either, but I wouldn't be wasting my time on Marvin Williams in a 12-team league. Let's move on to the next game, the Indiana Pacers and the Atlanta Hawks, a game that was actually competitive. Miles Turner bounced back, so obviously the calf isn't too much of an issue. 20-6, 3 blocks and a steal. I did mention yesterday, go out and try and buy low. Hopefully you're able to execute that in 24 hours. That's a good performance from him. While Daz Collison, another troubling one. 23 minutes for him, 11-1-1. And it's more troubling here that, yeah, Corey Joseph saw 28 minutes and Lance Stevenson's getting way more playing time, 10-8-6 for Lance. I'm still holding on to Dazza at the moment, and Joseph's not a guy to pick up even if he gets 28 a night, but it's an interesting situation to monitor for Collison with Joseph and Stevenson handling the ball more and limiting what Dazza can do. We also saw 13 minutes out of Mighty Joe Young, which that's not a usual occurrence. So that is something for us to monitor. Domantas Sabonis, 4-4 in 22 minutes. I had that big game in the last one with Turner struggling. But again, if Turner and Young are playing their regular minutes, he's going to be a tough one to own. While Bogdanovic had 19 and Oladipo had 23-5 and shot ridiculously well yet again. On to the Hawks. Yesterday, Mike Budenholzer, Johnny Collins, the Baptist, he didn't say the Baptist. If he dropped that in an interview, I'd be pretty happy. Johnny Collins is going to be on a minutes limit, but it's probably going to be around the normal amount that he plays. Ends up playing 17 minutes. Next game, 27 minutes. So which one is it, Mick? It was either a heavy minutes restriction or you're talking out your ass. I'm going to go to the latter, but it was probably talking out your ass. The Baptist, 18-9, a block, 27 minutes. He's a must-own player. In 30 minutes, he's going to be, if he gets 30 minutes, he's going to be a top 50 guy. But I'm not sure he gets to that level with the Undertaker set to return. Miles Plumlee had 10-5 in two blocks. Deeper leagues, he feels relatively secure at least until the Undertaker returns. Ersan Ilyasova, you'll be shocked to know that he's been inconsistent. He was 4 of 11 for 10 points in 26 minutes. Not a 12-team league guy, in my opinion. While formerly, Taurean Prince, 8-6 in 28 minutes for formerly. He's always due this one stinker. It's hard to tell when it's going to come, but he'll undoubtedly bounce back for the next game while Schroeder shot the ball horribly, 8-3 and 8-4 den. While another strong Kent Bazemore game, and he has really picked it up over the last 2 to 3 weeks, I would say. The next game, the Sacramento Kings and the Brooklyn Nets. De'Aaron Fox was out, George Hill was in, moved back into the starting point guard role, 22-7-4 for Georgie on 7 of 9 shooting. Clearly not able to keep that up, but that's big minutes again for Hilly. And if he's on your wire, I would go and add him. Look, with the Kings team, literally anything can change at any moment, so it is hard to rely upon any of these guys long term, but that's about 3 or 4 strong games in a row from George. So I'd add him until, you know, whatever dickery appears from Jaeger and he gets limited. But for now, he's an ad. Zebo, 21-8-3. He's a guy you want in 12s, but I don't think he's going to really stick long-term. Well, Cauley Stein is probably the most must-own of this group. 13-9 in 31 minutes. Scalabissier just continuing to develop there. 12 minutes for him, 7-6. While Bogdan Bogdanovic, after starting the last game and inexplicably playing only 18 minutes, he went back to 33 here, had 14-3-2, and he is a guy that I think should be owned in the majority of 12-team leagues. Now, Budrick Hield, I believe, was our waiver wire line, or a young gun of the night the last time the Kings played. Well, he played 16 minutes and had 2 points on 1 of 7 shooting. He is a yo-yo at the moment. He does have some decent upside. I don't think he's that good. You're well aware of that. I don't think he's that good for fantasy. He just doesn't contribute in enough areas. So he's fine to own as is part of your streaming spot. But overall, he's just not going to get it done most of the time. Now, again, weirdness always seems to happen with these coaches. With De'Aaron Fox out, Frank Mason, who'd been playing 23 minutes a night with Fox in the lineup, played only 16. 2-3 with 2 steals and a block, and it is really hard to rely upon anything that Jaeger does, as Justin Jackson played 20 minutes, and Vince Carter, who 2 games ago started, played 25 minutes, out of the rotation completely. So there is zero consistency on a game-to-game basis with this team. Onto the Brooklyn Nets, still no Jahlil Okafor. You know my thoughts, drop him, there's no point. I don't think he's good anyway. He'd need 30 minutes plus to be a top 100 player. That's not coming. He just isn't that good, real life or as a fantasy guy. Damari, 15-7 with 2 blocks is solid. Caris LeVert, 13-2-4 with 2 blocks is also solid. And they should be 12-team league guys, along with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who had a double-double, while Jumpin' Joe Harris had 14 points in his 25 minutes. He's more of a 16-team league guy or a low-volume streamer for threes. Jarrett Allen did what he does, and that's block 3 shots. So he is a great end-of-week block streamer. I'm not sure about how his upside is going to be for 12-team leagues, and he's not a guy that I'd be actively looking to stash. Well, the Blue Swimmer, 10-5 in 33 minutes, definitely someone who I would personally leave on the wire in the majority of cases. The next game, the Miami Heat, the beaten-up Miami Heat, traveled to Boston and pulled out a great win. No Justice Winslow, no Iron Shoulder, no Jim Johnson, no Hassan Whiteside. So Kelly Olynyk, as I said, let things rip. While Joshy Richardson, another big game, 19-4-6 with 2 triples. He is still on waiver wires. Please go and add him. Tyler Johnson started in place of Dragic, 37 minutes, 6-11-5 with 3 steals and a block. As long as Dragic is out, Johnson's going to have enough value to be owned, so do that. While the Duke, Wayne Ellington, hit another 2 triples, the premier elite 3-point streaming option, although a few other guys might be challenging that title. Bam Adebayo wasn't his best game, 6-5. I would much prefer Olynyk in 12-team leagues. Bam's more a 14-16-team league guy, while Jordy Mickey had 8-8 and actually played more than Mickey. He actually played more than Adebayo. Mickey's a short-term guy while Johnson and Winslow are out, and I imagine when Justice returns that we don't get huge amounts of Mickey in those games. On to the Celtics, Jaylen Brown bounced back after some poor performances, 16-4, 2 blocks and 3 triples. Good night from him. Marcus Smart hitting his threes, actually shooting. I think he's shooting 40% from three in December. Yeah. 15-6 with five triples for Smarty. I have said plenty of times I think he's a must-own guy, but you do have to be able to absorb that field goal percentage. Jason Tatum dislocated his finger. Maybe that's something that can potentially keep his 3-point percentage under 50% for the year, so I can save my beard. He had 11-7, missed both of his long distance attempts, but still was a pretty good night from him, while Kyrie had 33-4-5 and three triples. Daniel Tice, who wasn't going to play in this game, ended up playing 20 minutes, more than what Bainesy did. 0-4 with a steal and a block for Tice. He is a strong, deep league guy who's not going to lose a rotation spot, while Al Horford was putrid. 6-8, 2-10 from the field, fouled out in 27 minutes. We're well aware that he will be better than that as we move forward. Doesn't take a genius to figure that out. This one is an absolute ass-kicking. The Utah Jazz and the Oklahoma City Thunder, 107-79. There was no Don Mitchell. The Don was out. I thought that was an opportunity for Ricky Rubio to go off. Turns out, no. He had 5 points with an assist and two steals. It's getting real tough to own him. But after this game, I wouldn't be rushing to cast huge judgment, because it's a game where Jingling Joe played 23 minutes. Derek Favors, in his return from concussion, played 23 minutes. It was over pretty much immediately. So lots of players had their minutes reduced. It allowed Alec Burks to get a big game happening, 14-7-4 with two steals. But don't get sucked in unless we hear that Mitchell's out. He will go back to minutes under 20 in all likelihood. Rocket Rodney Hood was decent as well in terms of scoring, 17 points in 28, but didn't do a huge amount else. I think he is a 12-team league guy. Well, Epe Udo moved back to the bench, and if you added him in 12s or probably even 14-team leagues, you can move on. 18 minutes, 3-4 with Derek Favors back. Onto the Thunder, Westbrook 24-10-7 with four steals and 77% from the field and 100% from the line. That is exactly what his owners would have been looking for. So a huge Westbrook performance. Paulie George and Carmelo Anthony, even in a smashing, both of them shot just 41.7%. And before this game, amazingly, Paul George was shooting a higher percentage on three-pointers than he was on two-pointers. Now, that's obviously not going to stick. I think he was at 42% from three and 40% from two. It's either going to go in one of two directions. The threes are going to drop down, or the twos are going to rise up. But it's not going to stay at that sort of discrepancy, or both of those things could happen. So you'd have to expect at some point that Paul George's ridiculously low two-point percentage is going to come up, but there is also the risk that his three-point percentage drops, and we'll see how that impacts his overall field goal percentage. Steve-O Adams was back from his concussion, only needed 26 minutes out of him, 11-9. Everyone else was limited in terms of playing time, because again, it just was such an epic ass-kicking that there's not really too much to talk about with that game. Speaking of epic ass-kickings, the Orlando Magic and the Chicago Bulls. The Magic were once again without Az Gordon, Evan Fournier. Aaron Aflalo returned, but he did not start. Wesawundu got the start, because Aflalo is washed up. He's been washed up for 5 years, and I would much rather them just see what Wesawundu can give them. It wasn't much, 2-3, but Aflalo did nothing in his 9 minutes and has yet to have a good game. Now, John Isaac, I love John Isaac, but hurt his ankle again late in this game. He says it's not too bad, nowhere near like the first one. X-rays were negative, but let's hope that he gets himself 100% right before he returns. Lord Alfred Payton, if anyone dropped him, add him. 14-6-8. This is a strong performance. While DJ Augustin and Shelvin Mack got extra minutes, more than they would normally get. Jono Simmons, 6-6. A poor shooting night, but don't let this performance make you think that he is a droppable player. Well, Nikola Vucevic had 18-10-5. Mario Hezonja started once more in place of Gordo. Just the 12-2 for Mario, but still strong shooting. And I would have to think that he remains in the rotation ahead of Awundu. He's definitely ahead of Mo Spates and probably ahead of Aaron Aflalo as well, if Frank Vogel wants to play him down at the three, which I believe he should, just to keep him in the rotation. The Bulls, led by the Montenegrin alpha Nikola Mirotic, get their seventh consecutive victory. 22 minutes for Nick, 15-10, two threes and a block. I think the thing you should be a little bit worried about here with Mirotic is the fact that he played just 22 minutes in a game where Markkanen played under 20, and those two didn't share the court for a single second. That Markkanen-Mirotic combination is what's going to unlock Nick to be a 25-26 minute per night guy. They are still managing Markkanen's minutes in terms of his back spasms, but if they won't play them together, it is somewhat of a concern. Now, it's hard to get a full grasp on it because it was such a blowout and minutes were limited all over the place, and Mirotic still produced in those 22 minutes. But if you can get any other top 50 type talent back for Nick, I would be looking into that, because there is still that limit on, on what he can do with with Markkanen around. Now, I'm not sure what they're going to do with Markkanen, whether they go back to playing him 32 or not. I think that I'm doubtful. I reckon it's going to be more 29 to 30, but that's still going to put a limit on what Mirotić is able to perform unless they play those two together and really limit Robin Lopez, which Fred Hoiberg made a point of saying that Lopez is our rock, so maybe that's not going to be something that goes down. Punch Bob only played 15 minutes. He had 14 and 5. He's not really a 12-team league guy, despite some of the other performances. Chrissy Dunn was strong, 15, 6, and 7. And Denzel the Hammer Valentine had been just atrocious recently. But this shows the sort of value that he can have. 16, 10, and 5 with 3 triples. That is a really, really good fantasy line. His game is suited to fantasy, but he's just been so bad so often, it is really hard to consider him a must-own guy. He's more of a 14-team league player. Well, Justin Holiday had 8, 2, and 6, and I'd be happy moving on from Holiday in a lot of 12-team formats, and I wouldn't be grabbing David Nwaba. As I've said many times, he had 4, 2, and 3. The next game to look at, the Lakers and the Rockets. I've already talked about the stupidity of the Randle situation. Corey Brewer had 21 points in 25 minutes on 7 of 9 shooting with 3 steals and 5 rebounds. Huge amount of minutes here for Brewer. Something that he'd been playing like 8 or 9 a night prior to this. So just a complete muck up of the entire rotation. Don't really rely on that. He got some extra playing time with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope out for those legal reasons, as KCP can't leave the state of California for the next 20 odd days. The Lakers play the next 5 in California, so he'll be back for those, and that's going to limit what Brewer can do. It's also going to limit Joshy Hart, who was very good. 11-4-4, 3 threes, a steal, and a block. You know I really like him long-term, and I think he can be a sneaky top 100 sort of a guy at some point in his career. Talked about Bogut starting, 17 minutes, 2 and 3. I don't think he ever... Look, he might... The next game is against the Warriors. He can't possibly play more than 10 minutes against the Warriors. He will just... And I don't even care who the Warriors have got in. He will get killed. Well, Jordy Clarkson, I've been talking about this all the time, that limited minutes with such high efficiency and high usage is a bubble waiting to burst. And we've seen it the last two games. Playing basically exclusively as a backup point guard, 18 minutes for Clarko, 4 points, 1 rebound, 3 assists on 2 of 10 shooting. Still had the 24% usage, but that sort of high efficiency, high usage in limited minutes is generally a recipe for disaster. So Clarko can still be held, but I wouldn't be considering him the same guy that we saw through the majority of the month of November. Larry Nance, 13-9, strong night from him. Fine in 12s, but I wouldn't classify him as a 100% must-own guy. On to the Rockets. Chrissy Paul, I said, left early with that adductor issue. Hasn't been ruled out of Friday's action yet, but we'll hear more about that on Thursday. 8-5-5. And, you know, I rightfully give Tom Thibodeau shit about minutes, but Mike D'Antoni needs to just pull up. 45 minutes for Trevor Ariza, 43 for Jimmy Harden. He needs to try these guys, some of these other ones. Chinano Onwuaku, Joe Chi, Troy Williams, Bob Brown, Demetrius Jackson. Like, get some of these guys in and give them some minutes rather than running these blokes into the ground. We even saw 26 minutes from Nene in this game because Clint Capela was out with that heel injury. Ryan Anderson, still shit. 2-6 in 25 minutes. 12s, no. 14s, no. 16s, maybe no. He just cannot do anything. While PJ Tucker had a low-end double-double and Ariza had 18 and 11. And Eric Gordon, if he's on your wire, go and scoop him up now with the Chris Paul potential of missing a game on Friday. You might not even be able to use Gordo, but he's had 2 strong games in a row, albeit off some extremely high usage, which may not be something that continues. But with all these injuries, we know what D'Antoni does. He doesn't just bring the next guy off the bench. He just loads up more minutes onto his actual starters, which, again, could be problematic at some point. The Detroit Pistons made a change to their starting lineup. Tone Tolliver entered, and he moved Toby Harris down to the 3, and that moved Reggie Bullock down to the 2, pushing Luke Kennard down to the bench. Tolliver, an elite 3-point streamer, 18 points with 4 triples. You can add him if you need 3s, but don't consider him like an all-day, everyday sort of guy to own. We don't even know if he's going to continue starting while Avery Bradley's out. Drummond had foul trouble, 11 and 13. As did Eric Morland, who had 3 fouls in the first 3 minutes and played only 11 minutes. And that meant that Boba Marjanovic played, and he had 4 and 3 in 14 minutes, missed all 4 of his shots. Again, league has to be pretty deep to get Boban into it. Reggie Bullock, I did talk about him the other day and said, don't get overly excited. Only 2 games for the Pistons this week. He will not continue to shoot at 65%, and he had 4 points on 6 shots and had 1 assist. This goes to show why you shouldn't be really, you know, going super high on players who are putting up numbers that are literally impossible for them to continue. And that's what happened here. Toby Harris was piss poor. Reggie Jackson, another poor game, 6-3-5. And to be honest, I can foresee a situation in a couple of weeks where Jackson's not going to be a must-own guy. He is trending down, and I think we might be getting some injury issues maybe creeping up with him again. Onto the Mavericks, Dennis Smith returned, only 21 minutes for Den, 15-5-5. I reckon he, in March, is going to be a top 50 guy, and that could be sensational for your head-to-head playoffs. If he's on your wire, I would grab him. He was limited in this one, minutes limit, so Yogi Ferrell played 31 and had 11-5-2 with two steals, but I wouldn't be grabbing Yogi based on this performance. Well, JJ Barea, one of the best assist stream guys out there, another 7 assists in 19 minutes. The pencil had 25-7, that's Harrison Barnes for you new listeners to the show, while Maxi Kleber, 2-4 in 19 minutes. Like Maxi, not a standard league guy, don't even bother with him, except if it's a low volume night, stream him in, sure. But he's not going to be an every night contributor for your 12-team leagues, and probably not even for your 14-team leagues. The Minnesota Timberwolves beat the Denver Nuggets. Karl Anthony Towns, 25-10 with three steals, took the most shots on the team, and you really can't be too unhappy with Tom Thibodeau in that one. And the other thing that's happened in the last two games is Jamal Crawford's played a lot more minutes, and that's been able to limit Andrew Wiggins and Jimmy Butler's playing time. Now, that might not be great for our short-term fantasy satisfaction, but in terms of long-term preservation, it's better. 28 minutes for Crawford, 20 points, 4 threes, and 7 assists. I'm not adding him in 12s. Or probably even 14-team leagues, but it meant that Jimmy only had to play 35 and had 25-2-4, and Wigo only played 35 and was shit as usual. 7-5-2, two steals and a block. If you want to drop Andrew Wiggins in a 10-team league, I don't think I'm going to stand in front of you. I know I'm not going to stand in front of you because I don't care, but I'm not going to say, what are you doing? Don't drop him, because he's been piss poor. Averaging far fewer points this year, offers nothing in the other categories, and he just is not a good fantasy player at this point, and I just don't think it's ever going to get that way. Jeff Teague was pretty good.
My name is Jeff.
16-4-8 with two steals. Another nice night from him. Still waiting for him and Tyus Jones to play a second together. That would be great. While Marcus Georges Hunt remained in the rotation and put up a 5 trillion. On to the Denver Nuggets. Another change in rotation. Gaz Harris was out.
Nice, Gary!
Manny Moutier was out. And Nikola Jokic moved back into the starting lineup to play at power forward next to Mason Plumlee. So we had a starting lineup of the Blue Arrow, Torrey Craig at the 2, Baby Neck Wilson Chandler at the 3, Jokic at the 4, and Plumlee at the 5. So, yeah, so that's happening. Now, Jokic was forcing a ton of passes early because there was zero spacing in that lineup. He ended up with a good line, 22-6-4 with 2 blocks and 2 triples. 10 turnovers is not ideal, but still good to see him play 36 minutes with no minutes restriction there. And I imagine when Gaz is back, he'll just slide across the center and Plumlee will go back to the bench. Now, Mason was good here, 13-10-6 with 3 steals. Huge performance from him. And we know that he can put up fantasy relevant numbers when he gets the minutes. He's just not going to get those minutes on an ongoing basis. As for Chandler, 5-10-6, he's been all right. He's a borderline 12. While Torrey Craig, I've had a lot of questions. Do I add Torrey Craig? The answer in most cases is no. And yes, the Nuggets are all talking like he's going to be around for the rest of the season, and that's fine. They have to either do a consolidation trade, a 2-for-1, to open up a roster spot to keep him, or they need to waive someone, which I guess they could do with Dick Jefferson, to open up that spot. That is a possibility. But he played 37 minutes tonight, surprisingly didn't hit all 5 of his shots, hit 3 of 4, and had 10-6-2. 10-6-2 in 37 minutes is not a standard league player. He can be maybe a 14-team league guy, maybe, if he continues to start and play 37, which he won't. And he's more likely going to be a 16-team league guy. But I'd be banking on him at least sticking around with this team for a while, given how much Malone loves him. So it's great to see him doing this, but I don't think he's going to be a 12-team league guy. Ken Fareed out of the rotation completely. This was the perfect opportunity for him to play with both centers in the starting lineup. There was no other backup center on this team, and they still didn't play him. Trey Lyles got 24 minutes, and he is permanently ahead of Fareed in the rotation at this point. You can add Lyles. He's probably more of a 14-team league guy who's a points booster and not much else. 15 points in 24 minutes for Lyles. While Farton, Will Barton, 6-5-4. He is in a significant slump at the moment. The San Antonio Spurs and the Portland Trailblazers. There was no Kawhi Leonard. There was no Tone Parker for the Spurs. Then Dan Green injured himself late, felt a bit of tightness in that groin. They play again on Friday, so expect some weirdness there. You know, Parker will be back. Kawhi will be back. I would expect Manu to sit out. I would expect Pau Gasol to also sit out on Friday. He played 33 minutes here and had 20-17-5 with 2 blocks. That's huge, but I don't expect him to play on Friday. Kyle Anderson returned. He was on a minutes limit of 15 minutes. He ended up playing 24, had 5-6-3 with 2 steals and a block. So that's a really good line. But of course, that's without Kawhi Leonard. The interesting thing here is that Anderson played 24 minutes and Rudy Gay played 15. And this is something I spoke about when Anderson got injured and when Kawhi was coming back, is that if Gay is fine to play, you know, 30 plus minutes, why wasn't he playing them ahead of Kyle Anderson? It must be because the Spurs think Anderson's better and ahead of him in the rotation. And this game would give definite evidence towards that. So that makes me think that you're going to have Kyle playing the 25, 26 minute role and Rudy playing like an 18 to 19 minute role. That's yet to be confirmed, and we have to see it when Kawhi's back at full strength. But all available evidence, and in the NBA circles, available evidence and logic doesn't always apply, but given the fact that Anderson was starting over Gay when Gay was apparently healthy enough to play those big minutes, and then when in the first game back he plays an extra 10 minutes, makes me think that Anderson is clearly ahead of Gay in the rotation. So let's just watch this space and see how it all pans out. Bryn Forbes actually started this game over Gay, had 2 points in 19 minutes, but he could be an opportunity for a DFS type player, a stream option on Friday if Green sits this one out, and Manu, which are they're both options. For the Blazers, Al-Farouq Aminu, 8-6-2, 4 steals, 2 threes and a block. A strong performance with piss poor shooting. But overall for the Blazers, it was just a whole bunch of nothingness in terms of fantasy. Dame Lillard copped a knee in the back of the knee. It caused a bruise on his leg from Pau Gasol. He was hobbling a bit. Let's see if he misses any time. If he does, Shabazz Napier is going to be the guy to grab. 17-4-3 for Dame, while Napier had 14 in 21 minutes. Mo Harkless out of the rotation. Noah Vonleh out of the rotation. Zach Collins and Ed Davis are the guys getting the backup minutes. Collins had 2-2. Davis had 7-11. Neither of those guys are going to be 12-teamers. Well, Nurkic had 15-6 in his 25 minutes. And Evan Turner, 14 points, had a garbage truck drive into his pool, which is a humorous headline to see. 32 minutes, really more of a 14-team league sort of a player at this point. The Phoenix Suns and the LA Clippers, the center rotation is dead. Tyson Chandler and Alex Len, the combination for the third consecutive game. Chandler played 22 in this one, but weirdly, Alex Len, who'd played 28 in each of the last two games, only 18 minutes. He was good, 4-13, especially rebounding. But just again, nothing is predictable with this team at all. Tyler Ulis started at point guard and played 18 minutes, and Jay Triano couldn't have spoken more highly about Isaiah Cannon, which is a weird player to really go out and get a chub on for. 22 minutes for Cannon, 10-2-3. We've got to see him play with Devin Booker. I've got to really see that happening. So that means they are going to waive somebody else and not Cannon when Booker returns, because they can't have both of those guys on the roster at the same point. Because, of course, Cannon was signed with the Booker injury exception. So when he returns, someone else is going to have to go if they're going to keep Cannon in there. Now, I don't think that Cannon is a 12-team league ad. He's a streaky shooter. We've seen him in Philadelphia. We've seen him before in Houston. He can be a three-point streamer along the likes of a Duke Ellington or a Tone Tolliver or even Troy Daniels on his own team. But he is not... Look, and even if he does lock down the starting point guard role, that means nothing for this team, because that will just rotate him and Mike James and Tyler Ulis, and you'll never know on a single day who is going to play the minutes. It's just going to be a complete nightmare. On a positive note, Marquese Chris played 26 minutes and had 13-8 and looked okay. It doesn't mean that I'm rushing to grab him in 12-team leagues, but maybe. But all available evidence tells me he is not good, and this was a strong game. This was a strong game, and maybe that's the outlier, which I think it probably is. Also a good game from Joshie Jackson. I do need to mention that, 17-4. On the Clippers, the Rooster Danilo Gallinari has a torn gluteus muscle. He will be out for six weeks from when the injury occurred, which puts him back around the 13th of January. So we're talking about another 3 or 4 week time frame for him at this point. So you can probably go ahead and drop in certain situations if you're struggling and, you know, IR spot, you might have to go and drop the Rooster. That means we're going to see more CJ Williams. We're going to see more Jameel Wilson, who are okay-ish, but they're not anything that's getting me overly excited. They're more 16-team league guys. Wilson was okay here, 11-4 with 3 triples. And 2 blocks for Jameel. Austin Rivers bounced back, 21-2-6. He's a must own. While Lou Williams also returned to action but didn't shoot the ball well, 18 points on 18 shots. While Milos played 27 minutes, and people were looking, 6 points, man, on 2 of 7 shooting, that's piss poor. But those 6 points came on threes. That's a positive. 5 rebounds, that's good. 8 assists, that is also good. So it wasn't a completely horrendous night from Milos. I think it was actually a solid enough night where, again, I'll just restate it, I think he's a must own player. For the remainder of the season. The last game of the night, there's really very little to talk about with this one. Memphis and Golden State. Marc Gasol had 21, 9, and 5, and the rest of the Grizzlies Just really, really not good performances. Andy Harrison, back to the old Andy Harrison, 4-2-2. Any hope of him being a 12-team league guy is gone. Tyreek struggled. Mario Chalmers did okay with his 3 steals and 2 triples, but we're talking a 14-team league scenario for him. Jermichael Green was piss poor in his 24 minutes. Dylan Brooks, Benny McLemore, just whole bunches of nothing for this team, to be honest. Onto the Warriors, Klay Thompson was super hot early, 29 points, 5 assists and 2 steals, while Durant had 22 and 8, and Jordy Bell gets it done again. Only 4 points and 2 rebounds, but 5 assists, 2 steals and a block, but of course, once Draymond returns, once Zaza returns, there's just not going to be enough playing time for him to put up numbers that even remotely resemble 12-team league value. Love him, but he's just not going to be able to do it. Patty McCaw, 3-8-3 with 2 steals and then 2 blocks. He came off the bench behind Quinn Cook, but played his best game probably with Steph out. Steph's out for another week at least. I think that Pat is more of a 14-team league guy. There was also, of course, no Shawnee Livingston or no Andre Iguodala in this matchup. Uncle P had 7 points in his 24 minutes, and Omri Caspi again getting it done, 12-6. So he is, I'd add him over Pat McCaw in most cases while these injuries persist for the Golden State Warriors. That wraps up all 12 games from Wednesday night's action. I am going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and preview a Thursday in which there's 5 games in the NBA, and I'm going to play you a song. The song is it's by Jake McKelvey and the Countertops. I don't know the name of the song, but I'm going to play it, and then I'm going to come back and talk DFS for Thursday.
How could I lose the view of the tattoo on your shoulder? If I knew you were coming, I would have asked for the day off. Well, I thought that you, much like me, would look 15 years older. But there's no signs of you aging, and you don't have a smoker's cough. And so I supposed I would take off my clothes in the kitchen . Which I thought would be funny to you, but it just pissed you off. I had presumed that you didn't know what you were missing, but now I know for next time.
All right, guys, we are back. Let's talk DFS action. We'll start by looking at Wednesday's lineups on FanDuel. Westbrook had 57.5 and the Blue Arrow had 43.3. Murray has been absolutely on fire in December. The only problem is you don't know when Dr. Malone is going to come out and pull some sort of dickery sort of move. Jez Lamb, 40.6. Jim Harden, 68.1. The Minuteman, Trevor Ariza, 48.7, and the Hammer Denzel Valentine, 37.5. Kelly Olynyk had 45.4. Kyle Kuzma, the future MVP, had 55.4. And Pau Gasol had 49.9. Over on DraftKings, Jimmy Harden, 71.25. Trevor Ariza, 48.75. Jezalam, 41.25. Kelly Olynyk, 48.75. Pau Gasol, 52.75. The Hammer, 40.5. The future MVP, 58.25. And Kyrie Irving, 49.5 for a total of 411. And that cost $49,200. As I said, there are 5 games on Thursday. Not a bad amount for DFS, so let's talk about those and see what we can work out here. The first game we want to take a look at is the Chicago Bulls and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs are favored by 11.5, and the total is 213 points in this one. At point guard, Chrissy Dunn is at 7,800 on FanDuel. That's very, very high, but there is a limited amount of value options on FanDuel. So given how well he has been playing, he put up 43 points in just 24 minutes today, and we know that the Cavs have given up decent numbers to point guards. I don't think that Dunn is a horrible guy for cash. I think he's actually a pretty good cash option. On the other side, you got Jose Calderon, you got Jezza Grant. I don't think either of those guys are going to be players that I want to have a look at. At shooting guard, I really like Dwayne Wade here. 5,400, a 26-pointer. He came off in the last game. The Bulls do give up points to point guards and shooting guards, which is what Wade is doing. He had 31 the last time he played against them. So I do think at 5,400, he is worth a look. And I don't say that all that often about Dwayne. The plumber, J.R. Smith, 4,200 is always just a tournament guy. While Justin Holiday at 4,900, I don't feel much confidence in him. But at that price, he absolutely should be in your pool of GPP guys. Kyle Korver, similarly. At small forward, the Hammer, 4,100. Well, we saw what he could do today. Can he carry that form across? That remains to be seen. I don't feel confident in it, but I think that you have to look at him as a tournament guy, as that cheap guy, especially with guys like LeBron being so highly priced. Speaking of LeBron, he's at 12,300. They have bumped him up on this limited slate, and it is going to be hard to find those cheaper guys to put around him, but Wade and the Hammer, they're the sort of players that you can put around him even in a cash lineup. I do like him, just given the dearth of high-quality players on this slate. Nwaba's at 48, that's a fade. At power forward, Jeff Green, 4,600.
My name is Jeff.
He's been actually putting up consistently high-ish numbers, or numbers where you could have some reliability in cash. Now, I don't think he's got much tournament upside, but if you're struggling in a cash lineup, maybe you can put him in and get 22 or 23, which is not far off the value mark that he needs to get to. Lauri Markkanen at 5,600, limited today due to minutes and blowout, but could have an okay game. Maybe they limited him due to a back-to-back. I would not feel comfortable about using him in cash. While the Montenegrin Alpha, Nikola Mirotic, 7,200, still put up 31 today. That's very expensive for Mirotic, and there is a significant risk. I would really only consider him as a GPP guy because of that price. Like if he came in at 5,500, I'd be all over it for cash, but I think that there is an element of risk there for him to use in GPPs. Punch Bob's at 5,000, and very similarly to Mirotic, I'd only consider him as a tournament sort of a guy. At center, Kevin Love's at 8,000, a really good opportunity for him against the Bulls here. You know, getting 40 out of Kevin Love shouldn't be seen as any sort of surprise in this matchup. I think he's in a really good spot here. He's coming off a 40-point game in his last outing. And for the Bulls, you've got Rob Lopez at 5,200. Not a bad cash play. I reckon you get 25 out of him, 26, which again, on a limited type slate, is not going to be a bad option to enable you to get guys like LeBron into your lineup. Let's flip this onto DraftKings and see what we've got coming up here. For tournaments, I like Wado at 5,200, Nick Mirotic at 6,700. So Mirotic is a much better option on DraftKings than what he is on FanDuel. There is still an element of risk there. And Kevin Love at 8,300, which is a way worse option than he is on FanDuel. But still, given the state of what happens against the Bulls often and Kevin Love's ability to catch fire, that makes him a tournament guy. But I wouldn't be looking at him as a cash guy on DraftKings. The cash plays that I like here are LeBron at 11,900 and Chrissy Dunn at 7,300. Markkanen at 5,000 gives me some level of interest, but we saw today how limited he was. And if that's a back-to-back related thing, that's going to be tough to use him in any cash type situation. The next game we'll take a look at, we've got the Raptors taking on the Philadelphia 76ers. Joel Embiid is out for this one and probably the game after this as well. The no spread currently out for this game. Bebe Noguera and CJ Miles both missed the last game for the Raptors. If Bebe is out, it gives a boost to Jakob Poeltl. If CJ is out, it's a boost to the Jedi, OG Anunoby, and a boost to Norman Powell. On the Sixers side of things, JJ Redick is questionable. Now, if he is out, I imagine Jared Bayless pushes up to 30-ish minutes. You get more from TJ McConnell, and you probably get a little bit more Timotei Luwawu-Cabarrot in there also. At point guard, McConnell's at 4,400. Hasn't really been delivering the goods, averaging just under 15 points over his last five games, but there is the opportunity here with Redick potentially out for McConnell to go out there and play big minutes. So you could use him as a GPP guy. I could say the same for Bayless, who comes in cheaper, but hasn't been very good himself. He did put up 21 in that last game, got some extra minutes there with Redick out, so he is worth some sort of level of investigation. Kyle Lowry at 8,500. probably a little bit too high, to be honest, for Lowry here. He has done reasonably well against Philadelphia in the past with a 37.5 point average in the last three games, but that price probably just takes him out of my consideration pool. At shooting guard, I won't be using Redick here. DeMar DeRozan at 8,800. It's not an ideal price given his production at the moment, averaging 40 over the last five. But with so few options on the slate, he is a GPP guy, but I don't feel good about that for cash. Norm Powell also has a marginal amount of upside at 3,600 if CJ Miles is out. At small forward, Bob Cove's at 7,000. I don't think you can really trust him for cash, but another tournament guy. This is feeling very much like a GPP sort of a day on FanDuel as opposed to cash, where I think on DraftKings you've got more cash action going. The Jedi's at $4,000. He had 30 points today. I don't imagine that he's going to hit his threes at that rate, but he has been putting up some okay numbers. It's just not consistent. So in his last five, he's had a 30-point game today, and he's had a 7-point game, and the minutes have been, you know, relatively similar. So if CJ is out, it does give him a boost, and it puts him as a GPP guy and maybe strengthens him for cash, but he's just not a high usage enough guy to really consider a guy that's going to just lock you in at 20 each night that he's out there. At power forward, Amir Johnson's at 3,600 with no Embiid. He put up 19 in the last game, so he's got that ability to go for 24-25 here. Absolutely should be in consideration, even for your cash lineups, in order to get LeBron's in or DeRozan's in or guys like that. Benny Simmons at 98, I feel pretty good about getting him in. I think he's a real cash lock, I believe, on FanDuel. While Dario Saric at 6,400, I think he is a strong, strong cash play as well. Without Embiid, even though Trevor Booker is back. Serge Ibaka, 6,400, has been putting up great numbers. He's got an average of 35 across the last five games. I actually think that he is not a bad cash play as well, given how well he's been playing and how well he moved in today's game. At center, Rishaun Holmes, 5,900. That is a massive, massive jump, and that's a no. He played 26 minutes in the last game without Embiid and put up 19 points. There is zero chance I think you can use him for cash here. And even in tournaments, where's the upside at 5,900? Is Holmesy coming out and putting up 45? Maybe, but we haven't really seen evidence of that. And especially when you have got the option to play Amir, who is likely going to start, and to play Trevor Booker there, I just don't think that you want to spend 5,900 on Rishaun Holmes. Now, in a situation where he's at 4,500, 4,600, then I like it. I like it a lot, but at that price, no way. Valanciunas at 5,900, that's too high for a guy that's likely to play low 20s in minutes. Let's have a look at how this shapes out on DraftKings. Amir is at 3,700. So yeah, all the same reasoning that I said on FanDuel, good price for him there. Well, Holmes is at 4,600 on DraftKings. So I love that. That is really cashable to me. It's tournament play. That's a much more reasonable price. And I think he's going to be really highly owned in cash games. So yeah, that's fine. In tournaments, you might want to steer away from Holmesy on DraftKings, but that is a much more reasonable price. And I love Ben Simmons here at 9,500. I think he's going to be a fairly highly owned cash play. DeRozan and Lowry, as it is on FanDuel, probably just a little bit too highly priced. Saric also a bit high, but I do like Bob Cove quite a bit on DraftKings at 6,200. And Serge Ibaka at under 6,000 is a really good option. The next game, we've got the Boston Celtics, another team on a back-to-back, traveling to New York. Lots of back-to-backs in this one. In fact, every game on Thursday includes a team on a back-to-back. The Celtics travel to New York. Jason Tatum said he is going to play with that dislocated finger. And of course, with the Knicks, we need to check the status of
Porzingis,
who is dealing with that sore left knee. No Kristaps, then Mick Beasley is the guy we want to have a look at. If Tatum is out, then we're going to have more, maybe a bit more Gershon Yabesele. We're going to see more Semi Ojeleye in there, but more Marcus Smart and Terry Rozier will be the primary beneficiaries, I would guess. At point guard, Frankie Ntilikina, 4,500, has been a little bit horn-checked lately. 18 points in 23 minutes in the last one, but I do think that there is 30-point upside here for him, so he is in play on a limited slate. While Kyrie's at 8,700, pretty high. But he smashed through that today, had 48 points, and against the Knicks, he's obviously got that opportunity to go for 45 pretty comfortably. So I do think that Kyrie is an option here. Rugged Ronnie Baker's been getting some minutes. He's at 3,700. 18-point average over the last three, which is all right. I don't think there's any upside in Ron, and I'm not sure that there's a great floor, so I'm not really feeling all that spectacularly good about him. While Rozier at 4,100, if Tatum is out, I'm in on Rozier at 41 if Tatum's sitting. Marcus Smart at 5,600, another strong game from him today, 26 points for Smarty, but I'd really only consider him a cash guy if Tatum is out. Otherwise, he's more of a tournament guy, despite the fact that he has averaged almost 25 points over the last five games. At small forward, Jaylen Brown's at 5,700. I'm in on using Jaylen there. You know, 25 point floor, maybe. Even for all his free throw shooting woes, it doesn't really translate terribly to DFS. And at under 6,000, I think Jalen's a pretty good option most nights, while Courtney Lee was dreadful against the Hornets. Only 4 points in that one revenge game. 5,500 for Courtney there. I think he's in a bounce-back situation, so I'm on that. Dougie McDirt, minimum salary for a reason. Power forward, Tatum's at 5,500. Look, if he plays, I'm in on that. I think that's a cash option if he's ready to go. Well, Porzingis at 9,500, that is very, very highly priced, and I think you'd be better off spending that money somewhere else. The problem is, where do you find to spend that money on this limited slate, which might actually force you into Porzingis if he is ready to go? His last three games against Boston have been poor, with a 28-point average, but he's coming off some pretty big games of his own recently, averaging 41 over the last five. So he is an option, but not one that I'd be really, really keen on. Daniel Tice, yeah. Mick Beasley's at 6,300. Now, if Porzingis is out, I think that's worth looking at, but that's pretty expensive for Beasley. But he has delivered. He's averaging 35 over the last three without Kristaps. 6,300 is a high price, and you would never touch that if Kristaps is in. Enes Kanter at 6,300. He annihilated the Celtics earlier this year, so I think he's worth at least having a look at in this game. His recent production has been down with a 22-point average over his last five, but he has got 33 to 35 written all over him against Boston. I just don't feel super confident about him, but definitely not someone to completely fade, while Al Horford at 7,600 is too expensive in my mind. On DraftKings, Kanter's at 62 on DraftKings, so I do like that for a tournament option, while Marcus Smart at 51. I've got him listed as a tournament guy, but I reckon you could even consider that cash at 5,100. And then a bunch of other guys I like. Frankie Ntilikina at 4,000. I think you can use that in cash. Courtney Lee at 54. Jaylen Brown at 55. And Kyrie at 87 are all strong on DraftKings, whereas Kristaps comes in at 89. And if he plays, I like that as a tournament play at 8,900. And I would use it more cash on DraftKings than I would on FanDuel. The next game we're going to sneak a peek at is, what is it? It is the Memphis Grizzlies and the Phoenix Suns. No spread currently out for this one. Both these teams played today. This is a back-to-back. Will Tyson Chandler sit? Does that mean Greggy Munro comes in?
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
Don't know. Who knows? The pattern of rotations has changed for this Suns team. It is really tough to rely upon anything that they do. At point guard, Tyler Ulis. Who knows? Probably not. Andy Harrison's at 4,300. He has dropped off because he is not very good, although it is a good matchup for Andy. So you could consider him a GPP guy. I wouldn't. Isaiah Cannon, 3,700. I think at 3,700, you do have to look at Isaiah Cannon. For as poor as he can be, at that sort of a price, I think that you should be locking him into cash to enable you to get those high-priced guys in, while Mick James at 3,900 is not really doing it for me. At shooting guard, Tyreek's at 7,800. It's a little bit high, but we're going to have to take some guys that are a little bit high on this slate. So Tyreek has that upside. It's a perfect matchup for him. So I love him as a tournament play here in this matchup against Phoenix. While Troy Daniels at 4,800, it takes away so much of his upside. At small forward, Joshie Jackson, 4,300, a pretty good game from Josh today. Really just a tournament sort of a play. While Chandler Parsons will be back from his rest at 4,600. I'd love it at 42. At 46, I'm just not certain that I feel confident. I don't feel great about him for tournaments in any situation. I don't think his ceiling's high enough. But if it was at 42, I'd say, you know what, for cash, I think he's going to get you 22 and 23. That's fine. But 46, I'm just not quite there on him. Tony Warren Jr. is at 7,800 and hasn't been awesome without Devin Booker. So I think that's probably just a little bit too high. At power forward, Marquese Chris is at 3,600, was great today. So absolutely, at that almost minimum salary, you have to look at him as a tournament guy, while Jermichael Green at 5,600 is too highly priced. Now, Green does have a great option. He is just he has a great matchup. He is just not a great option. So you could consider him a GPP guy, but if he came in at under 5,000, I'd be way more interested than him at 5,600. Dragan Bender's at minimum salary, and he's just not an accumulator. At center, Gasol, 8,300, back-to-back for Mark, but this is as good a matchup as it gets against the Sun, so really, really a guy to pay attention to and to get into cash and to tournaments, whereas Chandler, I don't think he plays. Alex Lenz at 6,600, that would worry me, or it does worry me, if Greg Monroe is going to play, because Monroe will probably play more minutes in whatever bullshit scenario the Suns are trying to run, so you can consider Greggy out there if we hear that Chandler's out for personal reasons. Let's take a look over on DraftKings. For cash, Chandler Parsons at 3,900. I love that. Now, that's a big difference between 4,600 and 3,900. Love that. Same with Jamichael Green at 4,600. A lot more cash value in this game on DraftKings. Alex Lenz at 5,700. I still have my doubts about what Munro is going to do. But I think at 5,700, you should have a higher level of reliability, while Tony Warren Jr. is at 6,100, and that's a better price, and I can absolutely consider that as a cash play, while Marc Gasol at 82 is also pretty strong. All right, let's go on to the last game of the night. There's a lot of mess happening here. The San Antonio Spurs and the Utah Jazz. Kawhi should be back. Tone Parker should be back. I don't think Dan Green plays after exiting with groin tightness. I don't think Pau Gasol plays after playing 33 minutes in the first half of a back-to-back. I don't think Manu Ginobili plays. But we don't know what's going to happen with Rudy Gay. We don't know what's going to happen with Kyle Anderson. Does he sit on the second half of a back-to-back? There's a lot of unknowns. And then for Utah, the Donovan Mitchell is questionable with that toe contusion. If he is out, what happens? Alec Burks gets the boost. Does Rick Rubio play more? It's really hard to judge anything on what the Jazz did today, because they just got their pants pulled down and spanked really, really hard. So it does make it hard to really read too much into that. That point guard, Ravishing Rick, is at 5,100. He's got upside here, so I would absolutely consider him a GPP guy, but nothing else. While Pat Mills at 3,700, with Tone Parker back a little bit harder. Parker's at 42, DeJounte's at 44. None of those guys really interest me. At shooting guard, the Don's at 7,100. If he is back, I think you do have to look at him, but probably just as a tournament guy. While Rocket Rodney Hood at 56, I actually like that for cash, and there is some tournament value in the Rocket there. Brittany Forbes has an opportunity to start if Dan Green is out. Minimum salary, absolutely a GPP fly, but he started today and was just dreadful. But he can gun and put up numbers. While Alec Burks at 4,000, if the Don is out, Burksy at 4,000 would absolutely be someone that I would consider probably pretty close to a cash game. He had 33 points in today's one. At small forward, Jingle and Joe's at 56. I think he'll be better than he was today, where he put up 12 points. So he is a pretty good cash option. While Joe Johnson's at 39. He's going to start at power forward. He's done nothing yet. But for Joe Johnson to get to 20 FanDuel points, it's not a huge stretch. I think that he can be considered as a useful option. I won't be using Kawhi just yet, but at 5,500 in a GPP, maybe. I'm not ready to trust that in cash yet. Rudy Gay, Kyle Anderson, I just have no idea how they're going to be used rotationally, so they're somewhat of a fade, especially on a back-to-back. LaMarcus Aldridge, 7,500. I'm not going to be interested in using him just with so many unknowns. Davis Bertans at 37 is a GPP option if Pau Gasol sits. Well, Derek Favors should be the starting center at 5,500, and I would consider him despite how piss poor the entire Jazz team was today. At center, you've got Powell at 45. I just cannot look at now. He smashed it today. I cannot see that happening again. So if you hear that he's playing, maybe, but it could be one of those cases where he plays first half and that is it. But Pop's treatment of these back-to-backs has been different on most nights. So it is hard to get a full read of that. Why Epe Udo is back to the bench and we don't need to really pay too much attention to him. On DraftKings, the Don and Derek Favors are both GPP guys. Mitchell's at 6,700. Favors is at 53, while Jingle and Joe at 5,000 is strong for cash. Rocket Rodney Hood at 59 is probably a little bit too high, as is LaMarcus at 7,700. Let's go across now to talk about everything happening on the other sites. On Yahoo for tournaments, it's LeBron, it's Tyreek, Dwayne Wade, Marcus Smart, Rocket Rodney Hood, Jermichael Green, David Nwaba, The Hammer, Amir Johnson, Joe Johnson, Kylo Quinn, Kyle Korver. And for cash, we've got Chandler Parsons, Frankie Ntilikina, Rashawn Holmes, Jingle and Joe, Jalen Brown, Alex Len, Chrissy Dunn, Marc Gasol, Kevin Love, and Kyrie Irving. On Moneyball for tournaments, LeBron, The Don, Enes Kanter, Rocket Rodney, Jason Tatum, Jermichael Green, Amir Johnson. And then for cash, we go to Joe Johnson, we go to Rashawn Holmes, Joe Ingles, Jalen Brown, Dwayne Wade, Alex Len, Marc Gasol, Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, and Ben Simmons. And over on DraftStars for tournaments, Benny Simmons, Enes Kanter, Marcus Smart, Derek Favors, Jeffy Green, David Nwaba, The Hammer, Denzel Valentine, Kyle Korver, Amir Johnson, Marquise Chris. And then for cash, we have Frankie Ntilikina, Chandler Parsons, Rashawn Holmes, Courtney Lee, Jalen Brown, Jermichael Green, Dwayne Wade, Dario Saric, Alex Len, Tony Warren Jr., Chris Dunn, Marc Gasol, Kyle Lowry, Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, and
LeBron James.
And that wraps it up for today. Don't forget, if you are listening to this on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star review. It's a great way of helping out this show. You can also find the podcast on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify, and of course on YouTube, where you can subscribe, give a thumbs up, and leave a comment. And don't forget to check out today's sponsor, mybookie.ag, and use that promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a match deposit bonus of up to 50% and get lightning quick payouts. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Dr. Michael Malone.